Good morning slash afternoon, wherever you are in the world, lovely people. Welcome to Pants Optional, Doing Business the Introverted Way. So obviously, as any entrepreneur who works from or near home, whether in a retail space and then you return home to do work or otherwise, you should feel free to take the pants off, because pants are optional. That is why we call the class Pants Optional. So Joey's here, but it's going to be me taking over and talking because that's what I do best. And I've had plenty of caffeine, so let's jump right in. During today's class, we're going to talk about the cycle that regularly breaks your business and how to stop it, the boundary boosters you can use to get yourself more energy right this minute, the nature of true wealth and why it isn't what you think, managing your energy as an introvert, which nobody freaking talks about unless it's in one of those hippy-dippy books that I can't actually read because they just float around and have pictures of angels in them. But in, like, actual real-life world, I can't find it. And we're also going to talk about whether or not you're an empath, and that's the last piece. So if you're like, I for sure am not, then you can just kind of ditch us right before that part. The best comment, question, suggestion, or other input into today's program wins a seat in Introverts at Work. So unless you participate, you can't win because, yes, I do have a teaching degree, and, yes, I do know how to get people to participate, and that's how. So if at any point you have a question or comment, you want to hit star 2 to raise your hand if you're on the phone. Otherwise, you just want to pop in to the Q&A portion and say whatever you need to say. Say what you need to say, because otherwise I'm just talking to myself, and that's kind of to mostly terrible. So pop in and say things. Talk to me. Ask questions. Put yourself out there. Embarrass yourself slightly. I promise I won't laugh too hard. And let's get started. So this is Pants Optional, Doing Business the Introverted Way. So first, let's talk about the cycle that pretty much breaks your business a few times a year. Not that I have experienced this personally at all. This is just me hearing it from people because I am obviously perfect and have no flaws. Okay, continuing. So the cycle goes like this. You have this sort of declining interest in your business, and that leads to decreasing profits, and that leads to decreasing confidence, and that leads to decreasing interest in your business, which leads to decreasing profits, which leads to decreasing confidence. So we've all been there. You're busy with life or other things, or there's just stuff going on. So you stop blogging or calling your peeps or generally communicating, and then people stop buying as much. So you, in your infinite human wisdom, you freak out and decide that you're useless or you're worthless or no one cares what you have to say, and so you start communicating even less because your shit is so good, people should just find it, know about it, and buy it with no help from you, right? So at that point, when you start communicating less, you stop pinning and Instagramming and sharing your daily life and business with people. So sales drop even more, and then you get even shakier up in your head with regards to what people really think of you and how they must have just city purchased from you earlier, but no one cares what you're doing and no one wants to buy from you, so you might as well just apply to work at Starbucks like you've always wanted. So that's how it plays out. You have this declining interest in your business or things taking attention away from your business, decreasing profits, decreasing confidence. And I vote for you to break the cycle. So obviously that's not specific to introverts, but I think introverts are more prone to it than extroverts because when we experience decreasing confidence, we tend to shut down completely and kind of shell up, whereas extroverts don't really do that. So the only way to break the cycle is to communicate consistently, and you can do that by batching your communication. So what does that mean? You can absolutely blog once a month or once every few months. However, the act of blogging, I need you to stretch it to be at least 4 posts and the appropriate Facebook updates to go with them. So if you want to write 3 articles once a month and then schedule them and make the Facebook updates and schedule those as well, you can do that. If you want to write to your peeps once a month but schedule 2 emails to go out, you can do that. If you want to do your marketing once a month, but during that time you design all the promo materials and your images and flyers and updates for the next 4 weeks, you can schedule them to post on the regular without you having to actually be the person to upload them, right? So you don't have to have the same amount of energy in your business from day to day, but it is super freaking helpful to keep it about the same from month to month. So instead of freaking out at the end of the month and playing catch up for all the ways that you failed to communicate, you just schedule the tasks you know have to happen, keep showing interest in your business and break the cycle for another 4 weeks. So I know it isn't easy to break the cycle, especially after summer. You're in the kind of the netherland of just, the cycle is in full swing right now, right? You just completely ignored your business over the summer or ignored it to the best of your ability, so you made less money, and you're not as confident as you were in, say, April or May when you were booming, right? You will probably never completely overcome the desire to curl into a ball and hide when things get rough, because you are an introvert. But that doesn't mean you can't plan for the cycle, and in planning for it, overcome it. So, yeah, I know that you want to get under the covers and binge watch Girls or Game of Thrones or whatever else is on HBO. And I know that you want to hide from email and avoid checking it for the next few days / weeks. And I know that you want to have money magically appear in your bank account without having to learn how to sell better or market more effectively. Hello, we all want that, right? Like, I got it. But you can fight those tendencies. We introverts all have them, and you can fight them. The place to start fighting those tendencies is by talking about your energy. So saying stuff like, I should just have more energy, doesn't work, and we both know it. So beating yourself up about how much you sleep, or how much you don't want to go out in public today, or how much you dread doing that one activity that you quote-unquote should be doing, doesn't really work either. It's only by actively managing your energy that we can come anywhere close to solving the problem of getting you a little bit more energy. So first is just noticing where it's going. Like, with the amount of energy that you currently have, wherever you are in life, what is taking the most energy from you? So internally answer these questions. Super helpful, super simple. You can write a piece of paper if you want to, but you don't have to. What's taking the most energy from you? The first answer is always the truest one, so don't be like, my husband, I mean my business. Like, don't try and alter the answer to yourself. Nobody's checking in. Okay, and then what is next in line? So what takes the most energy after that? If you have kids, they're probably in your top two. I can't imagine that they would be like, oh, it's number five. And what's after that? And what's after that? So what's the hierarchy of what's taking energy from you in your life? And where does your business fall on the taking energy scale? So does it get the dregs that are left over after you've taken care of everything else? Or are you actively putting enough energy into it? Those are questions only you can answer, but they're interesting to sort of acknowledge, like, okay, right now my business is number 22 on the list, and that's probably why it's not doing as well as it did when it was number 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 on the list, right? Simple observations, not meant to make you feel guilty. So we're not talking about energy because I want you to be able to, like, run a few miles or, like, huddle up and do some push-ups later. I'm talking about your energy as it relates to the health of your business, as well as the health of your overall wealth. So true wealth, which nobody talks about, is it's not just having this shit ton of money, like, oh, man, I got millions, I'm awesome. That's how our society defines it, but true wealth is having enough time, energy, and money at any given time. So even if your business has been building like crazy, you've been taking all these classes and putting things into effect, and you're making more money, but you don't feel any more satisfied, it's probably because that money has come with a drop in both your time and your energy levels. So being too tired to enjoy the cash feels pretty much the same as being broke. So if I said you can have $1 billion, in exchange, you will feel exhausted all the time, and you'll be scheduled to do mundane tasks you can't stand for 16 hours a day. I hope that you wouldn't take the money, because the nature of true wealth is that you get this, like, influx of money, and it's crazy awesome, except that you effectively, in this agreement, lose all of your time and energy. Is that worth it? I hope you say no. So bringing energy into the conversation around money is really important. And while we can all acknowledge that money is important to our well-being, we like having food and clothing and shelter, it doesn't mean a whole lot without the ability to enjoy it. So when we talk about managing energy, we're not talking about some sort of hippy-dippy self-help bullshit, okay? We're not in that realm. We're talking about your ability to be truly wealthy, meaning that you have enough time, energy, and money as you go about your daily life. So this is not about repeating mantras or arbitrarily raising your prices, though these could be indicators of where your energy is currently going. We're just talking about changing the ways you allow people into both your life and your business. So when we talk about energy, we talk about true wealth. And when we talk about managing your energy, we inevitably talk about boundaries. So as an introvert, managing your energy isn't always simple or really obvious, but managing your boundaries can be a helpful start. And this is something that people are generally either pretty good at or completely suck at. This is something that Billy and I talk about again and again in Introverts at Work, which, as you know, you can find at briancampblog.com/introvertsatwork. So these are the common places where I find people letting their boundaries weaken and then collapse and then disappear entirely in business. And when boundaries are gone, it creates this sort of energetic black hole, and then you lose like minutes or hours or days or weeks to stuff that you just don't care about. And then you wake up a few weeks from now or at the next peak of the terrible business cycle that repeats itself, and you wonder what happened to your life, why you don't appear to have any control over it, and why you're so tired. And then that pattern repeats. So these are really practical, simple ways that you can create better boundaries, and those equate to more energy, more wealth, and more general happiness. So here we go. Boundary fail number one, you have no regular work time. You just start doing work whenever, and then you just sort of drift around with Facebook open for a while, and then eventually you do some work with a question mark at the end, because Facebook counts as work, right? So a simple, simple way to establish a boundary here is to choose a start time for working each day and stick to it. I don't care, I have no judgment about what time it is, like 2 p.m., 5 a.m., 9 a.m., 1:72, that's not a time, that's fine, you just made it up, I don't care, but pick a start time and work it every single day. It helps to establish a routine, and it helps your brain to get into the mode of, okay, no, I really need to tone it down, and we need to do work right now. And your body will do the same thing, and it will naturally sort of pep up and do what it needs to do to get you through, and that manages your energy pretty effectively. Boundary fail number two, saying yes to everything. So when you get in this mode, and it's this cycle of just saying yes to everything, it's like, can you babysit my turtle, and do you want to run a 5K? Can you make brownies for the social hour, and can you pick up toilet paper for the PTA meeting at Target on your way home? And sometimes you're just so overwhelmed, you just say yes to everything because it's simpler than drawing the boundary. But it's actually not simpler. The challenge here is if this is your thing, you just default to yes. Just start saying no 3 times a day, especially if that's your default. And it could be for little tiny things, but to say no, especially to things that you would normally say yes to, because that is a really easy way to start to take back your energy and make it your own. Boundary fail number three, mistaking urgency for importance. So just because something is urgent, it's not important, unless we're talking about you have to pee really badly and need to get to the bathroom. That is both urgent and important. But people that have, like, a graphic design emergency, like their logo must be changed in the next 2 hours or they will die, or, like, some sort of baked goods emergency or massage emergency or photo emergency, like, those things don't exist. We are not talking about life and death when it comes to these matters. But responding to urgency as if it is important, even though you're already dealing with something that is important, like caring for your family, sacrifices your boundaries. So I double dog dare you to respond to urgent requests with an alternate timeline that doesn't sacrifice your sleep. So, oh my God, I need to have this designed by tomorrow at 2 a.m. P.S., it is currently 1 a.m. No. First, you can ignore that email because that's not sent during normal business hours. And second, you can say the earliest that I can have it done for you is this time, period. There is, unless you pay this X rush fee, which is many, 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 you just woke me up dollars, okay? That's just drawing a healthy boundary around how you do work. And it stops you from feeling like a victim to your clients, which is a really terrible, terrible way to feel. Boundary number four, this is super simple, failing to collect money. You just people owe you money and it's fine and you just haven't asked for it. But that's sending invoices or reminder notices for outstanding payments. Super simple, get on that. I don't need to say anything more. So number five, not just saying yes to everything, but accepting all invitations. So do you want to go to my cousin Biff's play? Do you want to go to my sister's wine tasting party? Do you want to go to my mom's colonoscopy appointment? Do you want to go to my interpretive dance based loosely on the novels of J.K. Rowling and F. Scott Fitzgerald? Like, you can just say no. Like, no. Like, call in or text a no to invitations that you would normally accept because you feel obligated in some way to go and see, like, your niece perform in the Nutcracker Ballet in September. Like, just no. Just no. Nobody's going to hate you or think you're a bad person because you don't want to go to my mom's colonoscopy appointment. Okay? I'm giving you extreme examples so you can see how arbitrary it is to just say yes to everything. You make my heart sad when you say yes to everything. Just say no. That's also part of being a slaver as well, which we talk about in the Introverts at Work sample and then really extensively in the program, is that when you start to say yes to things and no to other things, you're starting to really develop your likes and dislikes and let people know them, and that helps you make you more of a human or a slavered human, meaning that you are clearly a distinctive individual and not just going with what everybody else is doing. So, next boundary fail, letting self-care fall to the wayside. So, for example, because you're going to tell yourself that you have not done this, so you haven't gotten a haircut in months, you don't remember the last time you were by yourself for more than an hour, even though you're an introvert, you have a giant pile of books to read and they just make you sad when you look at them instead of being excited about all that stuff to read, your garden is full of weeds, you just want a bath, you've taken to sort of locking yourself in the bathroom for 10 minutes at a time to just get a break. So, in this case, it's really simple. Just schedule an hour of time to do whatever you want this week. So up to and including get a massage, take a nap, play in the garden, watch TV, read a book, get naked, take your pants off, like you did earlier, whatever. It isn't what you want to do. It's making the time to do it that counts. And then make that hour a recurring appointment in your phone. Sneaky, sneaky, sneaky. I know, right? So you are managing your energy better by generating energy through introverted activities, because you need to do that. You need to be by yourself to be able to just keep functioning in a way that doesn't mean that you're breathing fire at everyone you encounter. Cool. Next boundary fail, accepting shitty clients' behavior. So if you're pushed around, jerked around, treated like shit, demeaned, talked down to, ignored, or met with hostility, but you keep a client on the books, I have to ask you why. And they take so much more energy than they give. So if they're giving you a few hundred dollars, but they're taking all of your emotional energy and you think about them all the time and your loved ones are sick of hearing about Stacy, the evil client, or whoever it is, just stop. So you've got to fire the clients that you can't stand. I know that's not easy. It's so much easier to get rid of a person before they give you money. If that's not financially possible, try adding a done with them day to your calendar. So that's like the last, remember, like for weeks before the last day of school, there was a calendar on the chalkboard or the whiteboard that was like, there's so many days we have left to go. Do the same thing for yourself for the evil, evil client. It will totally help you out. You will feel better, and you can secretly do a little jig that you've only got 16 more days with her before it's over. So you've got to actively end relationships instead of just hoping people will go away. Because you're wonderful, and they're not going to just go away, and that's going to be more and more terrible for you. So another boundary fail, and this one's so sneaky, but it's just trying to do everything on your own. So I don't doubt that you, as an amazing human, can get to the post office, the bank, the school, the gym, and the grocery store before 9 a.m., but why would you? So you're giving your energy to the post office, the bank, the school, the gym, and the grocery store, and then you don't have any left to give to your business or to the things that you've deemed the most important in your life, because I'm assuming that the bank is not it. So your task is to ask for help doing a task that you can't stand. So by asking for help with handling the dishes, the laundry, your inbox, your invoices, your shopping cart, or your customers, you're actively expanding the time that you can devote to both creation in your business and to your business itself. And then at the other end of the boundary fail, we have your ending work time. So your work day bleeds into night, and then you just kind of move your laptop from your desk to your lap, and then you pop on some HBO, and then you take your laptop into bed, and you fall asleep working, and so there is no distinctive time that your work day ends, and your brain suffers for it. So all of those boundaries, managing your energy, they come into play as an introverted entrepreneur, and they're all tied up with better selling and marketing as well. Because when you're absolutely exhausted, the thought of trying anything new or calling that client or reaching out to communicate to peeps is overwhelming. So without talking about things like boundaries and energy management, you can't really talk effectively about being in business as an introverted entrepreneur. That's why Introverts at Work walks you through the very real challenges of drawing and then maintaining your boundaries, including the pitfalls that we all face before we dive into the world of selling the shit out of your products and services. Because if we skip the steps that we've talked about today and the helpers that are outlined in Introverts at Work, you're pretty much a more miserable, exhausted shadow of a human. So other programs that might feel off to you are a little bit like a doctor suggesting that a patient who needs to lose 200 pounds start by eating more carrots. If we only add carrots, but we don't talk about the bag of Cheetos in her backseat or the Ben & Jerry's in the freezer or the patterns behind her emotional eating, she's not going to experience any results, and we're not going to change damn thing. Without getting to the root of the problem, it's a lot of tactics and techniques that don't ring true and that don't ultimately take on the bigger issues that are at play. Cool? I know that's all deep and intense and shit, but that's just the way it is, okay? Let's talk about your Cheetos. So we've covered the cycle that regularly breaks your business and how to stop it, the boundary boosters you can use to get yourself more energy right this minute, the nature of true wealth and why it isn't what you think, and managing your energy as an introvert. So if you have questions or comments about any of those things, now's the time to ask. Pop over and type your question, or on your magical phone device, hit *2. That will raise your hand and magical things will happen, and I will see it, and I can ask you questions. Okay, we have some questions, Joey says. So let me get to there. Magical times, magical times. Okay, so Tiffany says, the mom's colonoscopy was a real wake-up call. I was following along with, yes, I'd say yes to that and that and that and that until that. Thank you for that reality check. Yeah, people are just going to ask you to do stuff, and you can get in the default pattern, and it's just terrible. The default pattern is a no. Like, let's get out of that right now, Tiffany. Kim says, will you retail *2? Thank you. Yes, let me find it in my magical notes here. Boundary sale *2 is saying yes to everything. So whenever anyone asks anything of you, you just say yes. Because, you can do that and that and that and that. And that's a boundary sale. Tiffany also says, I'm constantly coming up with great marketing ideas, ways to bring people in, etc., but then I don't use them, or I wait until the very last second to make a post on Facebook about it. Then I get my feel bads hurt when it doesn't work. How do you just go for it when it's so terrifying to put it out there? That is part of proactively having a marketing calendar, which we talked about in Introverts at Work, and then breaking the cycle of, okay, this is going to come out this month because it's going to come out this month. And it's more painful for people to not respond to it just because I didn't give them enough time than if I gave them enough time and they decided not to. Because you're effectively shortchanging yourself. If it's like, hey, this thing is on sale for 10 minutes. Oh, you didn't see it until after 12 minutes. Okay, well, then you couldn't have bought it anyway. So part of the energy of that is to just go for it. I was watching the new interview with Oprah and Paulo Coelho, or however you pronounce it officially in Spanish, and she said, how do you learn the language of the world? And he said, daring. So part of it is just being daring enough to assume that people want to hear what you have to say and then showing it to them. The worst thing that they will happen is that they will ignore it, and the best thing that will happen is that they will hire you and give you the monies. And we like when people give you the monies. Lisa in somewhere says, do you have to tax digital downloads? And to that I say, I Googled this, and the answer is it varies pretty drastically by your region, your state, and your country, because we do have international listeners. So you, my friend, are going to have to get really comfortable with the Dougals and the Googles, and talk to your accountant about all of that. Cool? Let's see. Kim says, can you give me *6 again? Thank you. This was so amazing. Thank you. They're actually numbered in my notes, so let me awkwardly go through this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Number 6, letting self-care fall to the wayside. So you haven't gotten a haircut in months. You don't remember the last time you were by yourself for more than an hour. You have a giant pile of books to read. Your garden's full of weeds. You just want a bath. And you've got to schedule an hour to do whatever you want this week. Whatever. Boom. There you go. Chrissy says, will you send out your notes to us via email? And to that I say, of course, I will send the transcript, which is just bits and pieces of Introverts at Work that have been pieced together, as well as the recording to everyone at some point in the next 24 hours. Jen says, I'm struggling with getting my business going, and this has been a huge wake-up call. So spot on as to why everything seems overwhelming to accomplish. Yes. Because you get scared, and then once you're scared, it's all just sort of terrible. And keeps going with more scaredness, and it's a spiral and a cycle, and I hope this helps you break it. So if you're on the phone, hitting *2 raises your hand, and otherwise, I don't see any more questions, but we have somebody on the phone. It says that it's Meredith, and but then she disappeared and took her hand down. So if you would like, just hit *2, and Meredith raised your hand again. So, hi, Meredith. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, Kristen. How are you?
I'm good. So hit me with it.
Okay. So going through your list of boundary fail, I pretty much was revelation and sad at the same time because I realized I'm pretty much failing at every boundary step. And I guess the thing I realized in listening to your list is because I am a huge avoider of confrontation. So I wondered if you had any tips for dealing with confrontation as an introvert, like maybe what's the best tactic as far as phone versus email versus like the scariest thing possible would be in person, and maybe some tips to sort of navigate confrontation so that I cannot fail at all of my avoiding boundaries issues. Thank you so much.
Sure. Sure, but you have to tell me what sort of confrontation are we talking about here? Like with a client, and like, are we in a fist fight at this point, or are we just like
No. Okay, so when going through your list, you talk about things about like kicking bad clients to the curb and not being able to say no. I'm terrible at those sorts of things because it inevitably ends up in confrontation to where people get. I don't know. People have sort of this presumption that because you're in business, they're entitled to your time or you owe them something. And so I think I struggle with sort of setting up a boundary and saying, you know, things are this way or I have a policy in place. And especially in person, I find that people can sort of talk me into things that I don't want to do or business-wise I know is not a good idea. But as sort of a creative, especially introvert, that does not like confrontation, I find myself a lot of times getting, not being able to say no. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say that that's not so much about confrontation, it's just about setting your boundaries.
Okay.
So do you have kids, Meredith?
I do. I have 3 kids.
Okay, cool. So the example that I use, because it's so universal, is that your kids can tell the difference between, like, okay, you need to go to bed, and they can push it until they can feel that it's all like, oh, snap, like, mom's going to kill us. We don't go to bed right now. And that's the only one that they listen to. Have you ever had that experience?
Yeah, that's super true.
Okay, so your clients can feel that too. You don't lose that just because you're no longer 3. You can feel like, oh, what can I get away with? Right?
Yeah.
If I don't have that experience, when I meet clients in person, they sure as shit are not asking me for discounts or saying that I should, like, oh, you should just keep coaching me for a few hours more for free because they can sense that that's just not going to happen. Whereas
yeah.
If your clients are like, like any shakiness on your part, other people can feel out and really kind of like sink into and go for. So that, I would say, is about your boundary issues and not so much about the other people. Though it can be. I mean,
okay.
They can still, people can be an asshole to me and then I just ignore them or delete their comments or whatever. But part of it is that if they can feel that's not going to do any good or get them what they want, they're much less likely to try that tactic.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
So you just got to draw yourself some boundaries. Sorry,
and I guess, like,
magical list.
Well, and I guess as, like, an introvert, like, drawing a boundary, like, there's a lot more confidence for me to do it sort of, like, in an email or a text rather than doing it over the phone, because I think, you know, it's very easy for somebody to sort of cajole me into, you know, whereas a text or an email I feel like is more objective. Does that make sense? Is that okay?
Yeah, because you can be more carefully worded. So if you sense that there's something that needs to be said like that, you can totally, as training wheels, do that. That you're writing an email, it's pretty firm, or you're generally giving off the vibe that's pretty firm. And then you have a way to kind of combat it and not be talking to something. But eventually, when you get better at it, that will go away. And you will be able to be like, no.
well,
you want me to give you half off for no reason? No. Like, if, no. It's really interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, yeah, I totally appreciate it, because when you talked about going to, like, your mother's colonoscopy appointment, you're like, yes, that made total sense, light bulbs. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. That made Billy laugh really hard. She almost peed her pants. And I was like, I had to make an extreme example so you would get it. To be like, that's terrible. You should say no to that. Like, come on now. Okay, thanks so much, Meredith.
Thank you.
And Joey says we have a few more questions, so I am going to pop on to Empath Land, because you're going to have so many more questions after this. Oh, my God, it's so good. I so love that you're all, like, participating in this stuff, so I love you all very much. Okay, so let's talk about – no, it's all right. We'll do questions, because I don't want to shift gears quite yet. Okay, so – starting with Peter, she says, hi, Kristen. Fabulous already. Thanks muchly for your clear descriptions of what otherwise are a vague, indistinct feeling and sense of inefficiency, drag, and lack of activities. No problem. You're welcome. Boundaries always sounds like this really terrible thing. It sounds like you're coloring outside the lines or it's super hippy-dippy. And it's like, no, it has these really practical, terrible effects that means that people take advantage of you and then you feel like a victim and it's terrible. Kim says, thank you. I'm so glad you'll send this out. You're so wonderful. Thank you. That is not a big deal. No problem. Alex says, thank you for all your great info. I love being reassured to not put up with shitty clients. How do you go about telling them they're out of line without having them badmouth you around town? Let me just give you an example. This morning, I got an email that was like, hey, I'm looking into introverts at work, and currently I have no clients, and I don't know where to get started. So is introverts at work right for me? Because I'm, like, brand new to business. And I was like, no, you should start with my freebies that you can get here and here, really work through those, and then come back, and it'll be good for you in a while. So when you – it's acknowledging, like, if you have effectively zero momentum, like, no idea, no clients, brand new, don't know what to do, just no idea – you're not going to be able to empathize with the things that I'm talking about because you haven't been in business long enough. And you're going to feel like you wasted your money because you've bought, like, Calculus 3 and I need to send you back to Calculus 1. So being really honest about, like, this is not for you. When someone asks before they give you any money is a whole lot easier than once they've given you money and you have to refund, which I will refund if you're being terrible or horrible or you're just not a good fit. But that's not the same as saying at the beginning, I don't think this is exactly what you need. Here's what I think you need instead. And sometimes that's a referral to someone else. Sometimes that's a referral to my own resources. And sometimes that's just like, this is not going to work. But that's also why I swear so much. It's because that's, A, that's who I am. But, B, that will drive you away long before you'll ever buy anything from me. And that's really good because I swear in my products, too. And I don't want you to ask for a refund because I said the word fuck. Because I have better things to do with my time than respond to a discussion about the word fuck in my products. They were there. I used the F word on the sales page. You should have figured it out. So those sorts of things, being really clear about who your product is and is not for, and not being able to be not being afraid to push people away. So that's why we talk so much in the book about being vanilla and how that's not going to serve you as well as being a flavor and being the distinct flavor that you are, and specifically the ways that being vanilla led to the end of my marriage, which is terrible and horrible, and you're going to have to buy the program for that one. Okay, great. Next question. That was awkward. Cheryl says, of course, my family takes most of my energy. How do you and others balance this with a business? Sometimes they are urgent and important, but so is my work. So the point that I was really trying to drive home there is that you've got to build boundaries around your business so that there are times when your work is sacred, and unless your child is currently curling up on your lap, you need to be doing your work right then. So often that can mean a physical distance from the other people in your family. But even if you can only work from 9 to 10 every morning, that means that you're physically separate. I don't care if you stick yourself in a closet and then mommy's in the closet and you're not allowed to come out, right? I once had a really great office in a closet. It's fine. So it's drawing boundaries around, I really need you, I'm assuming that you have a partner of some sort, I really need you, my partner, to help me out with this by helping me establish this boundary, that from this time, I'm not available, and I need to be taking care of my clients, because my work is really important to me. And when I do my work, I'm happier, and I'm more likely to make you dinner and do nice things for you, and draw you pictures, and love you very much. And Doey's just made the BJ signal, which is also what happens when the ladies are happy with the mans, right? And we all know it's true, because that's how it is. Cool? Okay. So. And she's laughing because I said it out loud. But that's what happens, everybody. Okay. So Susie says, how do I say no to something I really don't want to do, but I know it's really, really important, and nobody else will do it if I don't? It's a committee to advocate for special education kids at my son's school. It totally drains me, but I feel like I can't not do it. So, if you can't not do it in terms of, like, your son's education will suffer as a result of it, I would really strongly advocate that you get yourself an ally so that it's like, okay, we're going to go and do this together. It's terrible, but we'll be together. I would strongly suggest that you reward yourself each and every time you do it. I would strongly suggest that you set a time limit for how much time it can take in your life. So it's only going to take an hour, and that's all. That's the longest the meeting is allowed to be today, because if it's 2 hours, I will lose my fucking mind, and nobody wants that, okay? So setting time limits, giving yourself rewards, and getting yourself an ally, those are all, again, coming back to giving yourself really strong boundaries around this specific thing that needs to happen. Like, sometimes things need to happen, that's fine. But when you draw boundaries around it, it's easier, and it doesn't feel like it's the blob that's just sort of oozing out into all of your life. Because things oozing out into all of your life is really terrible, and it can feel like my whole life is terrible. And it's really just this one thing that's really draining. Just like, we have no groceries, really translates to there are no bananas in the house. Okay, so we can take it and umbrella it over everything, and it's just not true. Which Doey has found after many years of research is what I say when there are no bananas in the house. There's nothing to eat. We have no groceries. Okay. Because she's over here so much, she practically lives here and knows. No. Okay. So I'm going to pause questions for a second. But you are free to keep them coming. I'm so thrilled that you're here. You're participating. You're contributing. You're saying things. I love it. It means that we are all humans. And you're all together, and let's talk about whether or not you're an empath, which might be a whole new word to use, so stick with me. So I'm 6. I am high on sugar. I'm singing Jingle Bells in my church group, and we walk into the nursing home. So this woman reaches out to touch my face, and all of a sudden, tears are streaming down my cheeks. Like, I'm looking into her eyes, and I feel this, like, sorrow that just surrounds her like a shroud. It feels heavy. It feels hopeless. And it feels like this cloak that she's really used to. So for a handful of moments, I can, like, feel her just horrible, desperate sadness. And I'm just weeping. Even though she's sitting listening to these well-meaning Christmas carolers singing in her living room. So that is my earliest memory of feeling someone else's feelings. Like, my caroling group had visited private homes and nursing homes like this one before. And I wasn't expecting this to be any different. But then that old lady reached out and touched me, and she was so happy to see me, and that wasn't what she gave me at all. It was just this sorrow, like you would not believe. The memory of it still brings tears to my eyes, and it feels like I'm choking. It is my first clear experience of being an empath. So being an empath is both a great gift and a massive liability. It means simply that you are capable of feeling what another person is feeling in your body. So get close to a person who's having a really great time, is drunk or high, or like, woo, and you're also going to feel really great. Let an old lady reach out and touch your face during an otherwise ordinary bout of singing freaking Jingle Bells as a kid, and you're going to cry in front of all your friends in no time. Emotions are contagious for empaths. They've always been contagious in my world, like the common cold or the great Thanksgiving stomach flu of 2002. I still can't eat corn chowder, people. So I've always been able to feel when someone is upset, anxious, nervous, tired, sad, angry, peaceful, happy, joyful, or embarrassed. Emotions are communicated to me as clearly as other people might use sign language to tell stories or make funny faces to get another person giggling. Emotions are really simple to dissect, and they're actually really easy for me to navigate because they're familiar waters. So other people might freak out when somebody cries or someone's busy having a tantrum or someone else is off dancing in the corner for what appears to be no good reason. But I identify the emotions at play, and then I play detective. The older I get, the more easily I can feel the mirroring emotions in my body and use the information to decode a situation. So, are you an empath? It's worth asking. If you've ever been in the middle of shopping at a big box store and felt like you couldn't breathe, like you were being squished from the inside, like you were being overwhelmed by a wave of uncomfortable and terrible emotions, or like you were trapped with an incredible pain you couldn't explain, you might be an empath. And to those who aren't empaths, you're a little bit weird. Like, what do you mean you can't shop at Target on the weekends? So like, why do you hate grocery shopping so much? It's just groceries. Or you might have heard, you like concerts, you're okay with crowds. What's the big deal about Costco? So it's a big deal because you can feel other people's emotions as your own. The emotions that people are feeling when they are grocery shopping are pretty much all terrible. They're very focused. They're like, I must get the frozen waffles, must get the frozen waffles. Child is screaming, must get waffles, 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 waffles. It's really direct, and it's sort of terrible feeling. So being an empath isn't any more weird than being able to identify the leaves of an oak tree or knowing the recipe for three different pies without having to glance at any sort of notes, right? You know things so far down that you no longer remember how or where the abilities started. Because you can feel other people's emotions as your own, you're incredibly sensitive to changes in other people's moods, feelings, and energies. So that means nobody who's about to cry can get away with the old, like, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. Because you know better. And people who are in a great deal of pain can't really hide it because you're going to be feeling it as your own in some cases. So I regularly ask Zoe to take ibuprofen because her chronic neck and back pain are so bad that they affect me when we're together. So what do you do with this information? How do you view it as something more than a curse? Because, holy crap, the emotions that most people are feeling aren't usually sunshine and roses, especially when they're like miserably wandering around Walmart comparing price drops on things. First, acknowledge that it's real. You feel other people's emotions. You know things about what other people are feeling, both in their bodies and often in their minds. You are keenly aware of changes in emotions and in mood. So even if a person were to be visually separated from you, you'd feel the same things. So you are not merely good at reading body language or facial expressions. Being an empath goes far beyond those skills. Second, you are not crazy, though you might feel crazy. So you might feel like you're at the mercy of the world, unable to control your own feelings. You're especially prone to strong emotions overtaking you when you're just minding your own business, oblivious to your fellow humans, until their emotions come creeping over to say hello. So the homeless guy holding his dog tightly while napping can cause you to just weep with despair. The kid flitting around pretending to be a butterfly in the park can lift your heart higher than the top of the sliding board. Those who aren't empaths won't understand why you're so affected by the presence of other people who enter the room, how you're so careful to manage the emotions of everyone you encounter as best you can, and why you're sometimes given no choice but to hole up in a room by yourself until you can feel your own emotions again. When your body seems to be going haywire with emotional information, sometimes that's the only option. So know that it gets better. The minute you realize what you're experiencing has a name and that you're not some sort of crazy-ass freak show, that there are other humans like you for whom emotions are contagious, you're ready to start managing your gifts. So I've experimented with all sorts of ways to protect yourself from the feelings of other people, and I'm going to share my go-to technique now. So this is obviously best tried in the presence of other people, since you're not going to know whether it's working when you're all by yourself. Okay, so when a person near you is experiencing something uncomfortable, and you can feel that, obviously, especially if they're in physical pain, don't you get pretty close to them? And then feel what you're feeling. So this is just noticing that you have this ability. You're an empath. Feel what you're feeling. And then imagine that someone's dropping a glass wall between you and the other person. They're effectively cutting off your ability to feel that other person. So scan your own body to see what you feel. Feel your chest, feel your throat, feel your solar plexus, feel your legs, feel your elbows, feel your neck, feel your head. And then imagine raising that wall and try feeling again. Wherever it's different, you're just feeling someone else there. So any added pain isn't yours, and you can choose to separate yourself from it at any time with your magic wall. So I know that's hippy-dippy, but tough, because it is what it is, man. So this is how I differentiate between my own aches and pains from when Zoe's having some kind of terrible headache. So I just do a quick scan of my body with and without the glass wall, and it means that I'm often in pain almost instantaneously. Okay. So more experiments are shared in Introverts at Work, and I give you a brief reading list, and we talk about the handling of energy vampires and why being an empath is actually a really good thing, and that's what we do. So also know that you can use your talents for your benefit. So while being an empath often means that you're kind of like, you feel like you're trudging through unwanted emotion in spades, you've also got some pretty distinct advantages over those people who aren't as sensitive, especially when you're selling. It's amazing what you can do. Those are also shared in Introverts at Work. So I know you've got questions. Feel free to ask them. Keep them coming. I'm going to hit them in 1 second. So today is Wednesday. Introverts at Work is only available through Friday, which is 48 hours away. So I encourage you at this point to head on over to braincampblog.com/introvertsatwork and check it out. One option is to take part in the program without any one-on-one attention from me. The other option is to apply, and then you can play with me and with Zoe. She's going to do a sales call with you to talk about your process. I'm going to do a lightning bolt session, which is pretty freaking stunning, and you apply for that. So if you've nodded along with what I've been saying, it's time to tackle your business issues head on and to grow your freaking enterprise, because I think that you deserve to have enough time, energy, and money to enjoy your life. And I think that you deserve to draw boundaries and to better manage your energy when you're around other people. And damn it, I deserve to check out what you have to bring to the world, because without Introverts at Work, you might not bring it into the world, and that breaks the heart. So don't let the terrible losing interest cycle or the having no energy cycle or the self-doubt and no boundary cycle win. So wake up, step up, get on up, sock it to me, and get yourself to braincampblog.com/introvertsatwork. And now, questions, people. Here we go. So I'm going to press the magical refresh button. Maybe. It's taking its time. And you all breather to ask some questions. And now it's disappeared completely. So if you're on the phone, you can hit *2. Otherwise, oh, there we go. There's a shit ton. All right, here we go. Got it. Okay, so let's see. There we go. So I never realized how much of an introvert I actually am. When I'm shooting, I have this awesome game face. But behind the scenes, at home with no pants on, is where I'm seeing every single one of these boundaries fails in full swing. Also, when I'm not photographing and I'm in a big social situation, I seriously go junior high dance wallflower mode. Saying no to some of these obligatory events is going to be tough, but I'm excited to try it. Good, because junior high dance wallflower mode is terrible, and you should just skip that event entirely if that's how it's going to go down. It's terrible. So how would you, next question, how would you combat boundaries when people come to your desk, even though you've already said no, demanding that you do something? So if they'll just mind punching them in the face, that is one option. Also, you can just reiterate that you've already said no and give your reason. You could also set up an appointment if you need to discuss something further. Or you can, if If you're in some sort of a coworker type situation, you can also address the situation with your higher up, who can act as a moderator in that sort of a situation. If someone's harassing you, bothering you, or otherwise being damn annoying. Cool. Taryn says, how do you say no to potential clients who are asking for a quote but are setting off 12,000 red flags that scream, I'm going to be awful to work with? I often want to say, I don't think we're a good fit, but the thought of making an income takes over and I do it, and then I regret every moment of it because guess what? They were awful to work with. So, Taryn, that's basically overriding your instincts and your intuition, and all those bits that are trying to help you are being like, nope, nope, this is terrible, nope, nope, nope. Those are the same instincts that keep you from driving off the road at random, right? Like, just like, don't do that, that's terrible. But you're ignoring them. You're effectively driving off the road. So a couple of things. Be really honest about, I don't think that I can serve you best. That turns it around to make it about them and not about you. So I don't think I can serve you best means let me tell you who can serve you best. You seem like a great fit for this person, or this person. I don't think I can serve you best. I'm not available that day. If it's any sort of like wedding photography, just you're not available. I'm not above lying if it means you get out of something like that. Or you can also just say that you have some qualms and you'd like to meet in person to talk about them, because people don't want to talk about qualms in person, and they'll move along. I wouldn't suggest just ignoring the email, because people get kind of anxious about that, and then you'll get 12 of the, like, did you get my email? Did you get my email? Did you get my email? Emails, which can be even worse than the initial email that's setting off the red flags. I would also encourage you to remember that for some people, like, their money is just not good enough. Like, if you just no. Just, it's just not. You could easily market your business more effectively and find different clients. It isn't like this one terrible client is your destiny. You can always get different clients that are more suited to work with you. And I guarantee that those people aren't going to be as happy with you as the people that you're better suited to work with. So making a referral right at the beginning, despite the fact that, yes, you could be giving up hundreds or thousands of dollars, is going to serve you better in the long term. So I want you to play the long game, which is the more I love my clients, the more I love my business, the more energy I have, and we're building a really happy cycle instead of a really terrible one where you hide from your email for the next 3 to 6 months until this client is gone. Cool. Okay, so referring, it's so freeing. I used to feel obligated to accept every quote-unquote client, even those who couldn't pay. Everyone needs pictures, right? So I've networked and I found all sorts of photographers with much lower price points, some that work for free because they have rich hubbies, and those people are on my ready list to send others to. Yep, awesome. Just send people away and through and all that good stuff. Peter says, re-Meredith's question, she was the live one, how about making a list of such confrontational boundary situations and scenarios, and then making sure to have preformed explanations, ideally already explained in one's business information given to clients, such as, I'll be available during such and such times, I'll answer emails within 2 days, you'll receive 5 images, / this or that service, / this or that product, from our session for this cost, et cetera, so that people, even before becoming customers and clients, remain aware of your boundaries. Yes. So it's all about having scripts for what to tell people, when to tell the people, and how to tell people. Awesome. So we talk a lot about boundaries, again, in Introverts at Work, and we talk about scripts as well. But absolutely, because everyone's ideas of what is confrontational are different. In my mind, confrontation happens when we're at like a physical level of like we're yelling at each other. And in someone else's mind, confrontation can be, okay, we're going to exchange an email and it's going to be moderately unpleasant. But being prepared for those situations and having answers in the can be really, really helpful, and that can act like training wheels as you go about your day and life. Carrie Ann says, in terms of the horrible confidence-losing cycle, I often get scared and reevaluate all my pricing and products instead of focusing on other tasks. What should I do instead of always reevaluating? Okay, so some people change their logo. Some people change their colors. Some people play on Facebook. You reevaluate all your pricing and products. As long as you notice that that's the thing that's sucking all of your energy, you can stop doing it. So just assume, like, from this minute forward, for the next 6 months, your pricing and products are staying exactly the same. You have to sell and market using them. Now what? So you're just, this is distracting you from the real work that needs to be done, which is communicating with your clients, which is selling, which is marketing, which is expressing yourself in the world, just doing the work you're supposed to be doing, and not necessarily just coming back to this loop where you question yourself. So it's just a matter of training yourself that that's not going to happen this time. In neuroscience research, that's called ruminating. Ruminating is just like, I need to change my prices, I need to change my prices suck, I need to, kind of fixating on one thought that doesn't go away and letting it take over. It's just ruminating, and you can stop it. And it can be any thought at all. It can be like, I hate my life, and it spirals regardless. It just swirls around and around and around in your brain. And it's up to you to notice, okay, I'm ruminating, we're back to here, and I'm going to stop that, and we're going to do something else now. Well, that is 100% up to you to change and to manage and to help with and to really take over. So, Cheryl says, wow, thank you. The energy empath information is a big help. I can't wait to try it out. This is why I have trouble setting boundaries. I can feel their pain, and I want to fix it, even though I can't, obviously. Thank you for the wall. So the wall is really cool. There are a couple of more techniques in Introverts at Work that have worked for me. I've had to read a lot of books and take a lot of hippy-dippy classes to sort of sort through the stuff that isn't like, oh, God, this is painful. Because hippy-dippy writers tend to not form complete sentences, and they have lots of dot, dot, dots in their work that just sort of go nowhere. So I'm glad that helped. There's more where that came from. Having a name from it is super-duper, super-duper awesome. Anita says, I came late, so sorry if this has already been asked. What about those of us that are ambiverts? Interacting with people in person, I'm fine, but starting this new business of mine, I think I have strong introvert tendencies. Okay, so if we go outside of being introvert and extrovert, we go into just you're human, and when you're doing something scary, you want to hide. That's just human. Like, and often if it's something is uncomfortable, you would rather not do it. And especially starting a new business, you become extremely uncomfortable really quickly. That's a really natural thing to do. So it's just noticing when you're scared, noticing when something is really triggering you or making you feel really uncomfortable, and then adding that to your calendar to do first the next day. So I would actively make like, I have 20 minutes to be scared every day and get that out of the way first, and it becomes less scary over time. So the first time that you had to take a step, it was really frightening. And now that you've been doing it for, like, decades, it's not frightening at all, and you've got it. Many of the ways that we do business are like that. The first time that you send a newsletter and someone unsubscribes, you're going to freak out and probably want to cry and panic and hide and think that everything is terrible. And when you have 73 subscribed unsubscribed at a time, you realize that it's balanced against thousands of people that are listening to what you have to say, and it's really okay. Like, you're building that muscle. So you need to build your, I'm totally afraid and I'm going to do it anyway muscle, which is a really good one to have. And I suggest starting your day off with, like, 20 minutes of, like, okay, this scares me, I'm going to do it anyway. So it's not necessarily about introvert or extrovert at that point. It's about wanting to hide from the scary stuff. And that's totally a reasonable thing to do, but you don't have to do it. You can just face it head on and do the thing. Do the work, you can do it. So you, if you have a question and you're on the phone, can hit *2. Otherwise, currently I am out of questions. Again, you want to head to braincampblog.com/introvertsatwork. We are running out of time to buy this. You're also running out of time to ask a question. So please feel free to, like, just hit me with it already. In case you are in any way wondering about more specifics for introverts at work, it's a lot like this. There are 4 of these calls included, so you can talk to me personally and ask all sorts of questions. And you're basically going to paint a clearer picture of both yourself and your business for your potential clients all over the world. So instead of being like, oh, yeah, her business is like all those other businesses, we're going to get you really distinct, really clear. We're going to get you to draw people towards you, to push people away, to draw boundaries. That is some really hard work you're going to do, but it's going to change everything. And it's going to be like, oh, that's the piece I've been missing. I can read all of this advice, and it won't feel like it applies to me because all of my energy is leaking toward this one spot. And that feels terrible. So thank you guys so much for listening. We are going to, Joe, pick a number between 1 and 20. We'll pick the magical winner, 17. That would be Tiffany talking about mom's colonoscopy is the question that wins Introverts at Work. So email us, brandcamponline@gmail.com. We will hook you up with a free spot in Introverts at Work. Everyone else, thanks so much for attending. If you have a question that's too private or personal or you just didn't ask, you can email us, brandcamponline@gmail.com. And hopefully, we will see you at Introverts at Work. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening, and look forward to the notes soon. Bye.